Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to enter into the world of the paranormal. Of ghosts, UFOs, demons, Bigfoot, and generally anything unexplained. We live in a diverse world where we don't fully understand everything that happens around us. These are the topics that we are discussing on Paranormal Horizons. Stay tuned with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang, as we look a little deeper into the world of the paranormal. Paranormal Horizons begins now. Everybody in internet land, I'm Jason Ophir, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And we're excited about the show we have planned this evening, and I'm here always with Sherry Pang. Sherry, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you, Jason?
Oh, not too bad. I made it, survived another week, and so things, I guess, are okay. Nothing's changed. I'm going to be taking a little bit of a vacation next week, and
are you really? What are you planning on doing?
I'm going to be driving down to the Bay Area, San Francisco-ish, Sacramento-ish area. Going to hit the road.
Nice. Good for you. Good for you. Excellent. So are you going to be visiting or, you know, what are you doing down there? Are you just for business or are you just going to be playing around?
No, I'm going to see family down there, and, you know, I don't see my family doesn't live anywhere near me, so every few years or so I head down and visit family, which is just nice. It'd be nice to do it more often, but circumstances have it. All my family lives in other states. I'm all alone up here, all lonely in Oregon.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad you're up here, because if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have a show.
Ah, well, thank you. So I see that our guest looks like he's called in. And what do you have lined up for us tonight before we bring him on?
Well, he's a returning guest. He's very well renowned. He's one of the top paranormal teams in the United States. He's one of the very few people, paranormal investigators, that are actually can get angels. This is what's really, really is amazing about his work. I'm 100% authentic. He can have, his pictures have full-bodied apparitions and also angels in his picture. And this guy is the real deal, folks. So he's just not only a good personal friend, but his work speaks for itself. So I want to introduce it back again on our show, Paul Coffey.
Yeah, Paul Coffey's been on the show a bunch of times, and he always has a lot of interesting stories and experiences to talk about. So let's get him on and see what's going on in the world.
Okay,
Paul.
Great.
Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
Hi,
Jerry.
Hey. Hi, Jason.
How you doing? So we're going to be talking about knitting. No, paranormal.
Knitting? I was like, what? Knitting? This is a rabbit show.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. He's joking. Anyway, how are things going, Paul?
Everything's fine. And you take it, you know, a minute at a time or a day at a time, whichever way you take it.
Yep, exactly. 1 minute at a time or 1 day at a time. Exactly. And with the help of God, you can... You know, hopefully we'll make it in one more day and add value to somebody else's life, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
So we're going to keep
so
it light. I mean, usually we talk about really heavy-duty stuff, but I think what we're going to do is keep it really light. And Jason, do you want to start out or do you want me to ask questions first?
Oh, well, what does Paul want to talk about tonight? What are we going to cover?
Anything paranormal.
Anything paranormal.
Right.
Do you want to keep... Oh, you can go ahead and ask him, Sherry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. Get the call-in number. Anybody would like to ask Paul any questions? The call-in number is 1-215-383-3999. It's 1-215-383-3999. So if you'd like to call and speak to Paul personally or you just want to chat with him, go ahead and just chat or call in. Okay. So anyway, Paul, just for new folks that are in the paranormal field, what do you suggest as far as preparation? First of all, should they just go to any place or, you know, what kind of preparation do you advise for a person who's really new into the paranormal investigation field?
Well, for me, it was a long path, you know, studying this, but obviously I kind of was on the right path. However, there are a lot of things to learn and, you know, knowing how to protect yourself, and you have to, you know, and I'm a sensitive, and that's kind of a plus throughout my paranormal investigating that I've done. But, you know, I've learned over time that, you know, I used to expose myself to the paranormal and, you know, ghost hunting. And I probably did a couple hundred investigations in my first year or two. And so I exposed myself a lot back then. And, you know, a lot of warnings came up. You should protect yourself. You'd hear these people talking about it. But I wanted the full exposure. And that's what a lot of people think when they go out to these places, you know. Why should I, you know, not carry the right tools, like a cross, you know, or put brilliant white light, pray to God to put the light on them and protect their auras. And there's a lot more to ghost hunting than people know. I mean, we are creatures here on Earth, human beings, creatures of God, whether we believe in that or not, or a creator of all that is. But we're still, you know, susceptible to ghosts and demons and entities of all sorts. And, of course, over my time, I've ran into all of that. And it taught me a lesson. And, you know, you have to protect yourself when you ghost hunt. That's probably the biggest thing. And but not only that, but being a spiritual, if you want to be successful as a ghost hunter, you want to be going up a spiritual, you know, have a, you know, learn as much as you can, such as becoming a medium, which has helped me. Because at one time I used to douse for spirits using, you know, dowsing rods or pendulum. However, over time I became a medium and I started, you know, gradually it came on me that I could speak to the dead. And therefore, you know, I could call them over and talk to them and they'd come around me and I would feel them. So, and, you know, a lot of people are looking at me when I'm ghost hunting and, you know, they'll see me talking or, you know, or watching me use a pendulum or something like that. But I'm actually talking to the spirits, whether they know it or not. But a lot of the people would just ignore me and say, okay, yep, oh, okay. But I would also, like, tell the spirits to come into my hand, you know, and they would come. Some of the people could feel it. Some people did. You know, as I go ghost hunting, I like to associate and show that there are spirits and, you know, find out how many are in the room or in the building even. And I can ask these questions and get the answers. It's kind of an edge that I have, and I've been very successful at it. I do consider myself one of the top ghost hunters in the country, because practically every time I go out, I capture ghosts on camera. And some of them are pretty significant. We filmed a show, or we did an episode for a TV show last year. It's yet to appear on TV, but that one investigation we filmed here in San Antonio is probably one of my top investigations due to the amount of spirits I captured while I was being filmed. But to get back, you know, it's very important to protect yourself, make sure your aura is clear, be very cognizant of that, and because, you know, spirits can attach to you, you can take them home. Some people, you know, because they don't have the training, they would be totally unaware of spirits following them home or how they attach, which they just latch onto your aura and you bring them home.
So just because you go in and you protect yourself, Paul, let me ask you, that doesn't absolve you from anybody, neither you or anybody, that they still latch on. It gives you an added layer of protection, but still, sometimes they may be sneaky and can somehow, you know, if you're weak or if you maybe have a tiny hole, they can get in that way or anything. Is that true, Paul?
Yes, it is. Some of these are very devious. You know, not every spirit, maybe the majority of them, don't want to leave the venue where you're at or the home you're investigating. They just want you out. You know, you came, you tried to look for them, you push them around, you know, but then they have the upper hand and they can do what they want, whether they want to manifest or not. You know, a lot of people are at a disadvantage as well with earthbound spirits. They don't believe in orbs, but in fact, all earthbound spirits are orbs, up to and including demonic.
So the orbs, for people that might be listening, that might not know, when you're taking pictures, just a little like translucent light spots that show up on the film, those are orbs and those are always spirits? Is that what you're saying?
Those are spirits for the most part. However, there is also dust floating around, humidity and pollen, such things like that. So you have to disseminate what is and what isn't. And it's hard to show that stuff online sometimes. But sometimes you capture a clear face in them, and that sort of tips you off that you have a spirit orb. I don't typically show orbs unless there's something in there alongside it or something, you know, partial manifestation. When they manifest, all they do is they open up that orb, you know, almost to full size when they were existing on Earth. It's a carbon copy of their aura inside that orb. And maybe at the moment they died or in the death state, whatever. And pretty much that's recorded in their aura. It's burned in. You know, it's their last image of who they were. Again, it could be at the death state. Maybe not. But for me, that's what I think. But it is true. They do exist that way.
Have you ever captured an orb with a face that was like somebody that's known, like a famous person in history or just a famous person?
I've captured some very interesting shots, like up in the Menger Hotel, which is a very historic hotel here in San Antonio. And you can see that possibly on my Facebook page, but it's a very old hotel built in like 1856, around there. And they built it because the gentleman owned also a brewery, and the people were falling down in the bar room. So the next best thing he could do was build a hotel. So he built a hotel over the bar room, tap room, whatever you want to call it. So it's a big hotel built back then, and there's a lot of spirits in that hotel. And I've ghost hunted it maybe 3 or 4 times. And the first time I ever ghost hunted it, I captured some pictures. They were of very, you know, like 1800s people, very dignified people. And, you know, I actually was studying mediumship back then, and I was able to, you know, talk to them either through pendulum or through talking with them. And so one of them told me their names, and he was a gentleman who was a cattle broker. And he lived in the hotel. He made pretty good money back in like 1890s, you know, in the 1890s. And he was 90 years old himself. And he passed away back then in the hotel. But on the other hand, being a medium, you can never trust what these earthbound spirits are going to say to you. They can say whatever they want. But you can take the information, use it. Which I have. But on the other hand, you know, you talk about distinguished people. I took a shot in the hallway of the hotel as well. And I had some ghosts peeking out of rooms or standing in the hallway, even one laying on the floor. The one laying on the floor looked like he had a uniform on, maybe a policeman. I don't know, it looked like that, just laying on the floor. And I had another one that had a Spanish uniform of a soldier that looked like he fought at the Alamo, or he was dressed like that kind of costume or uniform. And he looked like he was a Mexican, you know, and not them throwing out any racial slurs or anything, but he was dressed up. He had shoulder boards on. Kind of see buttons running down the center of his uniform. So you do capture some very interesting things, and you never know. And there's a lot to know about looking at your pictures and what to do with them. A lot of people take a shot. They look at it once. They don't go back and look at it again. But if you're going to be a paranormal investigator, you have to continuously go over and really look hard and have the software to, you know, lighten it, zoom in on it, maybe crop it, you know, to pull out the evidence, to show the evidence. And that's what I do.
Yeah, but, you would post something and it's amazing where it's across the board. People may call it fake or real, or they, you know, their imagination can run the gamut. Isn't that true,
right,
Paul? By one photo.
Right. You know, there's many non-believers. There's other people that, if they see something that's marginal and they don't know who you are, they may want to pipe up, you know, and say, oh, I made a negative of that, and there's nothing there. But if you take the picture and look close, blow it up, you'll see spirits hanging out of a window up above me, if we're talking that particular photograph that I posted. But, there, you know, that's just one I wanted to talk about. But there are many naysayers out there, and there's a lot of, like, Christian people that, you know, want to give their input. You know, they just don't want you working in that field. You know, it's like it's dangerous, or it's, you know, there's no such thing as ghosts. It's in their beliefs. There's all different reasons, and I've been attacked by them or had comments by them. You know, everybody else knows, you know, what I'm showing, and there'll be positive comments. They'll be like, wow, that's great, you know. How'd you do that, or whatever, you know, or maybe they say, well, not too good. But you have to live with that. You know, how are you going to shake that off? There's even people that on Facebook, they'll contact you, you know, and try to have you as a friend, or have you, you know, confirm that they're on your, that they can be a friend on Facebook. But their motive is to go, you know, and screw with you. And
I mean, I imagine,
I've had those. Go ahead. So
I imagine you have a ton of people that's saying it's pareidolia, you know, it's your mind trying to make sense of it and creating images a lot. Is that kind of the biggest thing that you run into with that? And do you think they're really, when it comes to photographs, that the pareidolia is a real thing? Or is it kind of because you have these psychic abilities, you can discern between what is the difference between an actual spirit and pareidolia?
Well, here again, and you can have ghost hunters that ghost hunt right alongside of you. You're getting ghosts on photos. They're not. And they get jealous. But I just want to make that statement because it's true. You know, but I'm open to everybody and all their comments on all my stuff. But for people that follow me, they know, you know, I have captured quite a bit. You know, hundreds of pictures of ghosts. Some of them are pretty fantastic, you know, and they're very clear. But, you know, some people respect me and so forth. Now, as far as, you know, like matrixing or the word that you use.
Pareidolia.
Of course. Yeah, right. Probably the same thing, or maybe they're telling you, you know, it's not.
The same thing I heard, yeah.
You know, it's not. It's your eyeballs, or it's your camera, or, you know, maybe it's steam or dust or whatever. They may be just negating
you. But
you
know what, Paul, and this is just my opinion for what it's worth. And by more, no, I am not in any sort of means a veteran or whatever, but I also feel that less lethal kind of work that you do, where you go home and you actually research the photos and everything, it's hard to tell what really it is. It's just somebody else's opinion. They may poo-poo it. Oh, yeah, I see skulls and things like that or whatever. It's like you said, it just runs the gamut. But what you do is actually examine each and every photo. You crop it. You lighten it up. You do all your filters. And you really look for the things that make it authentic or not.
Right. Absolutely. There's a lot of work in this. Also, you have to buy the software. And, you know, you have to look at stuff hard. Sometimes it takes me 2 or 3 times to spot it. Sometimes I'll crop a photograph and I got a ghost in it, like I have from that Menger Hotel. And then, you know, I've had it blown up and shown it so many times. But when I look at the picture closely, I see more ghosts in it, you know, just not one. But I'm fascinated by what I got. And it's clear as day, a great shot of a ghost. And so I get sort of locked onto that. But there's many, many more in the picture. So you really do have to, you know, take the time, scrutinize your photographs, have your SD cards around the laptop, you know, and pull them up and really go through things. And strangely enough, you'll start to see things, you know, that are looking at you while you're ghost hunt. But here, again, you know, as I say, ghosts linger a lot of times in orbs. And they can manifest very quickly just to take a look at you and then go right back and close it off.
Wow.
They can show their face. Yeah. Yeah, this is a phenomenon that I've been studying for a long time, or for at least, you know, 6 years now, actively as a ghost hunter. But anyway, so the camera, when you take a shot, takes a moment of time. But, you know, when you study this broadly and people shoot video and they see orbs flying around, maybe they should look at their films frame by frame. You know, break it right down, have software that'll expand the video images. So it breaks it down frame by frame. Then you view it and look at it, and then you'll start seeing partial manifestations. You may see ghosts, you know, a lot of things. You'll see irregular things happening. So you really have to look at this in all different angles, but you'll be successful by doing it. It takes a lot of time, a lot of dedication. You know, and for me, I have a lot of time to put into it, and therefore, I'm pretty successful in what I do.
Paul, you know where I see sometimes people, these paranormal teams, they'll go live or whatever, and you see something flying around. Does that mean it could be an orb? It could be. Let me ask you, what's the chance of it being an orb or just a fly?
Could be both.
Okay.
Could be a grasshopper. You know, it could be any kind of bug. But a lot of times you'll see that in a video or going live. But if you stop it, you know, if you can capture it, maybe even download it, whatever, which a lot of people don't, they just take it for granted. But if you took that live shot and you could see it later and you could hit the pause button, and you can go to where that orb flew, and, you know, you're looking at that, you're examining it. You may see that orb open up, or you'll see a face, but it may be frame by frame, and then it just flies off. You may not see anything, but that's how much you have to scrutinize the stuff. Very quick, and they can do it. You know, they'll appear and gone, just like that. Just like an orb
flying.
So line.
When they're in, and I've seen orbs, and I don't know, I heard this is not very common, but I've seen orbs physically with my own eyes. I've seen them in different colors. I've even seen them in my own house. They sometimes appear in my own house and in different various colors, which I think is the soul progression of that person or the spirit that had left this world. That's what I seem to think. But do you seem to think when you capture that picture, do you think that they're always a face on there, or do they change? Is it always changing?
The face can be the same, or it can be changing.
Okay. And it can be changing.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'll tell you, work with me personally, and when after you cleared my downstairs, I did talk to my mom, and I called her forward, and she came in as an orb. Her face was just exactly what she was when she was probably in her 40s. She was just beautiful, makeup on. I mean, she was just, I knew it was my mother, but I was just curious in how if she would be the same as she's floating around, or it would change, or that kind of thing. So I'll have to share that with
you. Cool. Well, like I said, when you see them flying around, they can manifest to a certain extent, but you will not see it because it has to, you know, it has to be illuminated as well. Or by chance, the light that's around you, or that person, you know, the ambient light, they'd call it. You know, as I say, if you freeze it in different frames, you may see the manifestation as it goes by. And it probably is in their death state. They had makeup on at the time. Some of them don't. They look pretty tough, you know. But that's what it is. That's what it is.
Now, you also, you just don't get evidence. You also send these spirits back into the light, right? Cross them over. And I know we've talked about it before, but in case somebody might be listening that haven't heard the previous shows, can you kind of give us insight in crossing spirits over? And I'm curious how many spirits in your career that you've crossed over into the light.
Well, you know, I've been keeping track a little bit, but I would just say millions of spirits. I've been doing it for like 6 years, and I was trained. I took a psychic development course with a woman that's a great person, beautiful soul, and she was a doctor, a mathematics doctor, and her husband was a psychiatrist or something, a psychologist, and he worked for the U.S. Army, and she taught me how to cross spirits, and she had a class for one day, or we had a two-day class, but she started crossing them the first day. And we then, all together in the class, we all did it. And, you know, with your third eye open and everything, you could actually see the spirits being sucked into the light, which was pretty cool. My first day doing it, and I truly believed that I was. Of course, the way you do it is you ground yourself, but also you have to put the brilliant white light of God around you, or else these spirits, when they come to you, they can pluck off a little bit of your aura. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll attach to you and not go. It's a possibility. So you have to put light around you, maybe even lead shield protection, which in any sense, you would ground yourself, you know, sending roots into the ground wherever you're going to do it. Put God's brilliant white light around you, and then you can even put lead shield, ask for that. Same way, you pray to God directly, and he'll put that lead shield protection around you as well as a secondary, you know, protection. Then what you do is you pray to God to bring down his light, love, and angels. And then the light will come down, and some people will be able to feel it. Maybe even right now you might feel that. But what happens is the spirits, when the light comes down, the spirits will go into it. And that's how you cross them into God's light.
When you do it, are you singling out like one spirit, or are there just thousands of spirits around us constantly where it's just kind of like a whirlpool? If a spirit's in the vicinity, everything gets crossed in, or
that's right.
You have to do it one at a time? Okay.
You can do it one at a time if you believe there's only one there, or if you're in a house. You really don't know. Most of the people don't know. They don't even know they have spirits in their house, but yet they go out ghost hunting. And that's the truth. In these old tenements or apartment buildings, complexes, cluster housing and all this here, you know, if you don't have spirits, there's a day that you may. And they may interact, or maybe they're just happy being in the house. Maybe they died there, maybe their family was there, and maybe a few died there. You know, but, you know, maybe it's, you know, if you know there's one spirit you're trying to cross, what I'm trying to say is that there may be others there that you're not even aware of, but they will also go into the light as well, possibly. But some may not. They may linger there still. They're fighting you to, you know, they don't want to go. So typically, if I really want a place clear, of course I'm a medium. I can ask how many are there, you know, and or if they're all gone. But at least I think I can, you know. But I think it's been demonstrated to me that possibly it's true. But I typically clear a couple times at least, you know, cross them into the light just to be sure. But it remains peaceful after I leave. So, you know, I believe, you know, that I do the work. But, again, you can cross one, or maybe all will go. And sometimes when you cross them and the light, it comes down for about half a minute or less, 20 seconds. That's the opportunity they have. But basically, they'll all go into it. However, when you do this, you bring it down God's light. It comes right down out of the sky. Therefore, it sends a signal to any spirits in the area, and they can come looking or wanting your help as well. So that's why when I clear, as I say, I do it at least two times, because I sense spirits coming. They'll be tapping on me, you know, send me, you know. I'll say, okay, I'm not done, got to do it again, maybe three times even. But after that, I don't feel anything coming to me, and I feel, you know, pretty successful in doing that, you know. That's basically how I do it.
And so with these spirits, these thousands or millions of spirits that are constantly around us, if somebody doesn't open up this portal or the God's light, they're just left to wander in purgatory just forever? Is that how that works? Or can they at some point realize they want to go into the light and then open that connection themselves?
When you die, God's light comes down and is around you for 4 days. Then it goes away. Now, the spirit who knows they're dead, practically every one of them knows they're dead. However, it may have been a tragic ending. They, you know, it is a possibility. I say they all know they're dead, but it might have taken some time. Not right off the bat. You know, somebody tragically killed. They may just lay there, not accept the fact, or not even know what they're doing, or not even know they're on, you know, in the spirit world, which does coexist with us. But the thing is that a lot of spirits do go into the light, but some do choose to, you know, linger, whether their family is there and they don't want, you know, they feel they're better off with their family. Maybe their other half is still living. Maybe they'll stick around. Maybe they'll decide no longer to stick around. They don't want to see what's happening. They get tired of it, you know. And maybe when that person dies, the other person they're waiting on, they go. Or spirits that have been lingering on the earth plane for a long time, they will hang out at cemeteries and they'll wait until a funeral is there and the light is still on these people, you know. Sometimes they'll see it, they go to it, and they go at that time into the light. Maybe in a hospital, you know, maybe in a morgue or whatever, there's that opportunity when God's light is there, you know, when the person just passed, and the light is with them, that they'll go in at that time. But there is a lot of spirits that have lingered and are still on the earth plane, and I guess this is what we're looking for. So, you know, it's not to say they won't go. Some of them won't go because, you know, they feel they sinned, they're going to be judged, and they're going to go to hell. They had a bad existence, you know, and they just don't want to be judged. You know, back in the, there's a lot of spirits from the 1800s still lingering. And back in those days, you had fire and brimstone. You know, if you had one sin on your heart or, you know, your soul, that you were going to hell. And so that was pretty well beaten into people back then. And they, you know, they believe it probably even now. You know, they don't want to go. They don't want to be judged. They may be going to hell. So that's another reason why they linger, you know. So that's basically it. I can
so
go
there
on
has to be
forever.
Are there forces that don't want this to happen that try and interfere you from doing this work? I mean, I would think there would be if I would imagine things don't want things crossed into God's light. Darker forces.
Well, I don't see all the time, but these dark forces are out there, and they're real. And every paranormal investigator, I know there's a lot out there, even myself, at times, that have investigated a lot. And they've never had an experience with a dark, you know, dark entity. But they could be anywhere. You can pick them up anywhere, anytime. But, you know, there's a good possibility that if you go to the wrong place at the wrong time, you could pick one up, you know, and they do exist. You know, some people know them as demons. Some of them, there's all different things, you know, like planetary spirits, which is an entity that's not of this earth, but interdimensional spirits. And which, you know, a lot of people don't believe in this stuff. But when they get there, when they have an encounter with it, they get religion real quick, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff does happen. Do they hold them back? It's a possibility. It is a possibility. I can't say for sure, but it's a good likelihood it does. Because maybe the entity is controlling the home and won't let these other spirits out.
Do you think that people? Do you think that people that don't believe, in a sense, are safer from these forces, other versus people that, you know, dabble in the occult or are really hardcore believers in it? Do you think that just the fact of believing in it kind of opens them up for those kind of negative or positive events, you know, positive or negative events, just through belief?
I believe that anybody is a target, and it's more common than people know. And let's face it, you get an innocent person that just sits at their coffee table or kitchen table or goes to work, you know, the hardworking person that doesn't even pay attention to this stuff. They're not, you know, they are susceptible as well. And, or even a ghost hunter, they may be putting themselves, you know, more in harm's way than they know. But these could be anywhere, subway station, on a bus, on somebody else, that, you know, they've had enough fun with this person, they're going to move on to the next. On an airplane, which I've seen that happen, including me. So everything, all things are in play. But when you ghost hunt, you may be putting yourself a little closer to it. It's possible.
I'm curious what you've seen on an airplane. What was that?
That was a spirit that was on me. And what happened was I was taking a flight, you know, back to my home state. And I stood up, you know, plane landed, and we were, you know, disembarking off the, you know, leaving the plane. And there was a big fella about the same size as me, and I'm pretty good size, you know, wide shoulders. And this guy was similar. And both our arms, you know, we sort of bumped together. And when that happened, a spirit jumped right into me. You know, right on me. I felt it. And then I knew I had to clear it. But unfortunately for me, I did. But this kind of thing can happen, you know, without people even knowing it, you know. Even people that aren't in the paranormal. And when you get one of these things, a dark entity, some people don't even know what's going on. And over time, they can, you know, work on you and, break you down, take you away from your normal existence. And believe you me, they can do it. They can take you away from your family, you know. They can basically break you down every day. So, and over time, it takes a toll. Some people, you know, are pretty near death, you know, sometimes. And they still, you know, they still don't know what's going on. But these people, some of them reach out pretty quickly, you know, to the Catholic Church, get an exorcism, or, you know, have a deliverance minister come, or an energy worker, or somebody that can read them, you know, and see what's there. A lot of people, you know, they stick to traditional medicine. And I know in one case I worked on, the person was totally checked out, head to toe, was a woman, and her husband was out of work because of her. They had to watch her every day. And, you know, just to make sure she was feeding and, you know, being able to get up, go to the bathroom. And so, you know, it was constant work and watch TV most of the day, you know, to keep her happy and stuff. But they reached out to the Catholic Church because their doctor, their health doctor said, look it, there's nothing wrong with this person physically or even mentally. The problem could be spiritually. And they recommended that she reach out to the Catholic Church for an exorcism or to get a evaluation done. And they did. And sure enough, the person had a demon on them. And, you know, and hopefully when they do an exorcism, it comes off them. That would be a happy ending, or maybe they don't get it off. But typically, they'll work until it's gone or until that person is, you know, in better shape.
So, Paul, can and you can maybe answer this question if you feel like it. What happens when a normal lay person is attacked by a demon? Can it be various symptoms from physical to mental to emotional, those kind of things, financial? How do you know if you just have somebody just like an attachment compared to a demon?
Yes, it could be all of that. And a spiritual person is more susceptible to these kind of attacks.
What kind of person again?
A holy person or a spiritual person. Somebody they can talk to, you know, like a medium.
Mm-hmm.
They love them. Sorry to say, but it's true. Because then they know you can listen to them, and then, you know, they're on you. And you're a great target. Or, you know, I'm saying mediums, not you. But,
knock on wood, huh?
Yeah, right. Keep your yeah.
Yeah.
But
we don't want that to happen, do we?
Oh hell
yeah,
no.
We've had, We've had our share, haven't we, Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
so, you know, it's interesting how, you know, when you talk about those things that, you know, even people, normal people, you know, they, like you said, they don't even have to go into a, you know, a hospital or an airport. They can just pick it up and pick it off from somebody else. So, you know, it's like a viral disease.
It is. Well, but this particular case, I will not mention their names or anything, but I asked them, you know, I was an investigator for an exorcist group, and ultimately, you know, the first thing they told me, I asked them, how do you think you got this? You know, they said, they started giving me a story. They thought, you know, this woman used to be very social, bubbly, driving the car, no problem, have a happy time, happy-go-lucky. One day she had a party, and she invited her friends over, her family as well,
mm-hmm.
extended family, and I guess there was a cousin or his wife that came along, and they thought this jumped off the lady, her, you know, her cousin's wife, and it jumped onto this woman, and that's how they believe they got it. But in a lot of cases, you do have to look back on your history to try and figure it out. But, you know, in our days of living, we're all over the place. Sometimes we won't figure it out. You know, even like myself, you know, I deal with so many spirits or paranormal things. Even as a spirit sensitive and a medium, every day I encounter this stuff all around me all the time. And, you know, they're looking for me to clear them. And so stuff comes to me, and it's, you know, it's a difficult thing. But you have to have your resources. It's always good to have people, you know, available to come to your aid, or at least have, just keep that in your back pocket. You know somebody that can, that you can call immediately for aid, for help. It's just that, you know, we don't think of this when we ghost hunt or look for the paranormal if we actively go out there and look in all the time. But it's just a little homework to have, you know, assets available does happen. So that's a great suggestion that even I, you know, have to refresh my book. But
yeah, it's interesting, like you said, Paul. Is and when you say that there, you know, there are people that you should count on. You know, people that you know are really good in what they're doing and know what they're doing,
right.
Not just saying, yeah, I could do it, and you know, that kind of thing. I mean, this is something that is should be taken very seriously, and you don't want to mess with this kind of stuff. I mean, you just, this is not something you want to think it's a parlor game or something like that. This is real stuff that can affect not only you but others that are around you.
That's right. You know, this can come on fast or maybe slow. But when it's on, it's on. And then you're going to scramble. Maybe you won't. You won't even know it hit you. Maybe you will. But, you know, maybe you'll have an inkling of an idea. But it might be too late, or you'll be frantic or not capable of finding this information out. So, you know, I would suggest anybody working in the paranormal field to get out their Rolodex and start looking, you know, for some viable. You should always have a backdoor plan. What if? You know, people don't think of it until, you know, the wrong time at the last moment.
Exactly.
Or when, you know, but you do want a viable healer and they better know what they're doing, because, you know, this is a treacherous slope. And you want somebody that really does the work. And you want a true demonologist or Catholic Church to do an exorcism, somebody of that nature, somebody that's truly knowing what they're doing. Otherwise, you may be risking yourself, too,
that's
and spending
true.
A lot of money.
I mentioned it on the last show about people that go online and they buy or they sign up for these free things where they become a minister. And I know people that go out and do that and get just print these certificates and then go go deal with people's hauntings and try and clear people and just based on going on the internet and filling out a form.
Yeah. They could be putting themselves in harm's way. Not only that, but, you know, it's a very serious thing. If you don't know what you're doing, if you think you're going to go out there and help these, you really, truly want to help these people. But, like I said, you need a viable group that do this on a regular basis, maybe even like a deliverance church where they just can pray over you constantly. You're better off to do that than you are to get an individual or a ghost hunting group to go out there and help you, okay? If you are being attacked by a demonic or an entity, yeah, some of these teams might have skilled people in that direction, but you got to go full on. You have to really, you know, find the right people. Maybe
Paul. I find that my trust would be more leaning towards the Catholic Church and somebody that deals with exorcism, not just, you know, when you're talking about heavy duty stuff like that, you're not messing around. You want to get this job done. Yeah, it's too fragile. It's too much at stake.
You're absolutely correct, and it is a dangerous thing. But I enjoyed ghost hunting for many years, and I never encountered them. But little did I know that further down the road I would, So you do have to. Any paranormal investigator that knows what he's doing, or anybody that doesn't know what they're doing, they should know what they're walking into and what the possibilities are. And a lot of them know that someday they may walk in the wrong place. So I could put that bug in their ear right now. But the thing is, you should keep yourself protected so that, because earthbound spirits can hover around you, they can pick off your aura. And a lot of people, when they leave an investigation, they just, they didn't do much physical as assertion or whatever activity, but they come out and they feel like they ran a marathon, or they're like 20% more tired than when they walked in. What you don't realize is that spirits are negative, entities are negative, and they can come and take some of your positive aura, for whatever they do with it. Maybe they just want to feel that positive energy, or maybe they consume it. I don't know. But the thing is that they should always protect themselves and have a backdoor plan and know who to call and call the right people. And if you don't believe me, let it happen once, and maybe you'll change your tune. It certainly is an eye-opener when it happens.
Well, Paul, it looks like I'm looking at the clock, and we're out of time. And time flies when we're talking to you, and I want to thank you. Sherry, right. Did you have any other questions?
No, I don't. I think he covered everything pretty much.
Yeah. Jason, do you mind?
Go ahead.
Can I take that picture that cat and the alien that's on your page?
That is such an eerie picture that I posted to the group. I saw that and I was like, oh my God, I got to post that. Yeah, no, take that.
I like that.
Oh, and
that was good.
And And before I forget, if somebody wants to contact you for any information or learn more about your group, where can they go?
Yeah, Central Texas Paranormal on Facebook. And they can give me a like or a follow if they wish to. And you can check out most of my work on that page. I think I'll have some.
He's amazing.
I'll have some good stuff on it.
Most
yeah,
definitely.
So everybody check it out. And but we got to close the show. We're out of time. So, Paul, once again, thank you for coming on and sharing your experiences with us this evening. And I'm sure we'll get you back on in the near future because there's always so much to talk about. You definitely have your hand in all aspects of the paranormal, and I find it definitely fascinating. You have some really great stories. So thanks again for spending the hour with us.
Oh, you're welcome. And talk to you next time, maybe. But
yeah.
Be safe.
Hang in there, Paul. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. Okay.
Thanks,
you're welcome.
Paul. All right, Sherry,
all right.
Another episode down. You know, this is episode 141.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow.
3 years.
I can't believe that.
About 3 years.
Jeez. It's
crazy.
Always refreshing to have some, you know, really good people that are experts in their field of expertise. And Paul just seems to be well-rounded, you know. He doesn't take things very lightly. He's very serious in what he does. And I have to say, for, you know, with my personal experience, the guy knew what he's talking about. And I like him because he's so, you know, he's not going to go and candy coat anything. He's just straight on, and what you see is what you get. And I just like that approach. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to make you feel good when there's something going on. So I highly recommend him personally.
Yeah, I like people that that are honest and don't try and sugarcoat things. It's honesty is always refreshing. And but he's a great guest, and we'll have to get him back on in the future. He's super busy, so I'm sure he's learning more and having new experiences. And now next week, what do we got happening? You're the scheduler.
We're
going to
go into open lines, Jason. Hey, it's that
awesome
time again where we're going to be entertaining our listeners. So open lines, and who knows? I might end up taking a second call. So you never know. We'll just keep it open and see what happens. Go with the flow.
And I'll be broadcasting from a different location in Northern California. I hope there's no technical difficulties with that, but I don't foresee that there will be. So we will be not, you know, right now we're about, I don't know, maybe 40 miles apart. Next week, I will be about...
Oh, Jason, no, we're not. We're only maybe about 20 miles apart.
Yeah, but it's 20 miles through a lot of traffic, which makes it at least 40 miles.
I know.
Maybe even 50.
We'll have to get together before. We'll figure it out. But anyway, yes, I'm looking forward to hearing you from a different location.
Yeah, I'll be 650 miles away.
Oh, my goodness. Now, what city are you going to be actually be? Are you going to be in L.A. or are you going to be in the Bay Area?
I will be outside in the country, outside of Sacramento.
Sacramento, wine country, Santa Rosa, no
yeah
telling, Windsor.
Well, it's out. It's about, I don't know, maybe an hour outside. I mean, it's really in the boondocks. Like,
okay, good. Gilroy could be like down there, Danville.
Actually, it's not far from, I want to say Roseville, but
yeah,
I don't know. But out there.
Pass
yeah
through there. Well, have a good time, and the weather should be better than up here, right?
I hope so, but I'm kind of hoping that I'm not going to run in any winter-type weather trying to get over the pass that's down there in southern Oregon. I don't know the name of that pass, but there is at least one pass I have to go through.
Okay, you got chains and everything, right?
Yeah, that's such a pain. I'm too lazy for chains. Although when we had the snow
so
up here, when we got
blasted.
Something
about touching to the spider chains. I heard that they're very easy to do.
I have the cheapest chains, and they were fairly easy. And I helped somebody else put on chains that are like that, and they ended up breaking their chains because I'm so ogre-like and strong. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. All
but
right.
Anyway.
Well, we'll listen to you in a different location. Hey, thank you, everybody, for listening to us on Paranormal Horizons.
Absolutely. So we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, and hope everybody has an outstanding week. Good night, everyone.
Take care. Peace.